The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
One of the most famous of all indicators or things that you might follow if you're managing stocks is called the McClellan Oscillator. It was created years ago by the parents of this gentleman that we've got with us today, Mr. Tom McClellan, Sherman and Marion McClellan. Years ago developed the oscillator, and the heir apparent to that wonderful piece of work is Mr. Tom McClellan. Tom is editor at McClellan Financial Publications. We're pleased to have him with us today.
Good to be with you.
I'm glad to have you, because last time we had you, you nailed it. You absolutely, you know, we get a lot of people on this show that that do a lot of prognostications and throw out a lot of opinions, and we're grateful to all of them. But we've never had one exactly like yours. You absolutely hit it right on target about where the market was going. So I guess I should just throw it out there. I understand that you're a little wary of this market right now, and you think that we may be coming to an end here very, very soon in this month of May. Is that correct?
Well, my answer is going to sound like I'm talking out both sides of my mouth.
That would make you an economist.
The reality is it's a little bit nuanced here, and so you got to understand the different time frames of what we're talking about. The most important thing that everybody should understand is that the strong breadth data that we saw coming off of the February low was not what was expected, not what was due and called for on my leading indicators, but it was very strong, and it says that there are gobs of liquidity out there, and you don't end a condition with gobs of liquidity quickly. It tends to sustain itself for a long time. So we are promised higher highs than where we are right now. However, we've gone awfully far, awfully fast, and stretched the rubber band quite a bit, and we need to have an ordinary pullback just to reestablish some doubt and some fear and take a rest break before we can go on to those higher highs.
Okay, and are things lining up with the VIX and various things? Are things lining up now that is likely to come? You know, we've entered into the going way in May season now. Of all the adages on Wall Street, that is probably the one that's most repeated, is go away in May and then come back on actually in Europe, as you know, it's St. Ledger's Day, but you come back later in the fall. Do you believe that May is going to be that magical month where we get our pullback?
You know, that's a great strategy overall, except in election years. It doesn't work average in election years. However, not all election years are created equal. We are
that's correct.
An election year of the second, at the end of a second term of a presidential term in office. And when you have a second term president like we do now, because of the 25th Amendment? Can't remember. But we are guaranteed that we're going to have somebody new. Well, the stock market doesn't like the risk of the unknown. Even if the stock market could handle either outcome of whoever is getting elected, investors don't like not knowing. And so for the last several months leading up to the election, there's a lot of just waiting and not deciding, and I think I'll think about it later kind of behavior, and the stock market generally tends to be flat. I don't think we're going to see a repeat of what we saw in 2008. Mostly because we don't currently, as far as I know, have a future Treasury Secretary trying to line up his next job while working at the New York Fed like we had in 2008 and arranging a crash. I don't think that we have that condition this time, so I don't think we're going to see the same sort of decline that we saw in 2008. But I don't think that there's great upside yet. It looks much better after the presidential election just because people can feel more resolved and they can get back to looking at stuff other than all the cable channels showing the same town hall meetings of the same candidates all the time.
Oh, it's awful. In fact, you're right. We start off with a clean slate this year since we have to elect a new president. But of all the elections I've ever lived through in my time, this is certainly the one that's the most different. I think if it's very confusing, so maybe it will confuse the investing public just as well. But now, historically, going back over a long period of time, because your parents created this index, what, back in the 60s? Going back over a long period of time. Pardon me? 69,
it was 1969,
wasn't it?
And I was not much help because I was much more interested in playing with my Hot Wheels cars back then.
but going all the way back to that point, election years have always been pretty good, I would think. I mean, you know, we tend to celebrate the fact that we can change our administrations without guns and bullets, and that we live in a free country. And so I've always kind of looked back and thought, well, you know, election years, we may not go up, but we probably won't go down much. Is that would that sync with the oscillator and some of the things that you've seen?
Well, if you think about a brand new president taking office, generally they try to get everything done on their agenda in the first year or two.
Right.
And every president in my life that I've had awareness of, they will take office and they will discover that things are even worse than I told you about during the campaign, and that the only solution is putting whatever package of spending or tax cuts or tax hikes or something that he wants to get through Congress. It's always worse, but don't worry, I've got it under control. Well, investors don't like hearing that things are worse. So generally speaking, the first 2 years of a presidential term are not so good for the stock market, because people are hearing all this bummer messages on the news all the time about how bad things are, and it's only going to get worse. And then once the midterm election is done, a first-term president especially typically tries to spend year three and four running victory laps and declaring victory for having solved all the problems and please reelect me. And people like hearing good news, and so that tends to lift the stock market in year three and four. Election years are a little bit more iffy because there's the potential that guy might not get reelected. It's even more iffy, as I mentioned, in the second term of a presidential term in office, because you're guaranteed to get somebody new. And so the guy in office isn't as concerned about declaring victory as he was at the end of his first term. And so you don't have the same sort of good news and good feeling effect on people and their emotions and investors' behavior.
Do you think interest rates play much of a role? You know, we talk a lot about the Federal Reserve, but they don't seem to be getting quite as many minutes of press as they did the last several years. What are your thoughts on interest rates, and if Janet Yellen and company should raise rates this year, will it have a meaningful impact upon the market?
Well, whatever the Fed decides to do has a meaningful impact, even if only because people think it does, and therefore it does. That's circular logic, I know, but that doesn't preclude it from being used by people. I don't know how the Fed members feel about being less important. I think they kind of like having more of a sway on things and having people come out to hear them talk when they give their lectures everywhere. That's why we have so many Fed officials going out and talking all the time. And oh my gosh, wish they'd just go sit in their office and look at the data a little bit more and not get out and feel like they need to talk about it all the time. I think that the Fed should raise the Fed funds target, if only because what we've found in looking at years and years of data, if the Fed would just leave the Fed funds target at the same rate as the 2-year Treasury note yield, then they would do much better policy. When it goes above the 2-year note yield, you tend to be too restrictive of liquidity. When it goes well below the 2-year note yield, as it did at the end of Greenspan's term when he was worried about his legacy, you get things like the real estate boom or the internet bubble or the current boom that we're having now, which is already busting for the oil drillers. And so if they would just outsource the task of deciding on interest rate policy to the 2-year note market, they could do a much better job. But that would not serve their purposes of feeling important and feeling like they know better what's best for us. So I don't expect them to do that anytime soon.
You're not very optimistic about this crowd, Tom.
Well, all right. You know, so in 20 years of publishing our newsletter, we have been 100% accurate in calling what the Fed should do. Now, what the Fed actually does do is different than what they should do most of the time. But we're always accurate at saying what they should do.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. And everybody seems to have an opinion what they should do. So when we come back, because we've got less than a minute, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the oscillator. I want to talk about a warning that you just issued about the VIX futures ETF, because it seemed to me like things are beginning to get worse. And I was wondering what you thought about corporate earnings, because corporate earnings seem to be lackluster at best. And I'm wondering if that is going to affect things long term. So, folks, if you'll stay with us, we've got Tom McClellan with us of the McClellan Oscillator. And so we're going to have a really interesting second half, so stay with us.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Tom, before we get started, tell the folks how they can get a hold of you, how they can get subscribed to the Oscillator. It's commercial time.
Well, the oscillator is just an indicator. It's like a tool. It's not a perfect tool. You can't do it. You can't build an entire house with just a hammer. The oscillator measures the acceleration that takes place in the advanced decline statistics. So it's very useful at detecting changes when they're happening. People can learn more about it and find out about our subscription services by going to our website, which is mcoscillator.com. There's two L's in oscillator. I like to say it's like a McNugget, except it's a McOscillator. And we have a twice-monthly newsletter. We have a daily edition. People can sign up for free to get our weekly chart and focus article series, a way to learn more about the indicators that we follow.
Yeah, and I was wondering about that. What's the difference between the daily report and the is it twice monthly? Because there are two there that I looked at.
Correct. The daily edition tends to focus in on the smaller movements. We can't look at every little wiggle that takes place if we're only talking twice a month. So the twice monthly newsletter tends to be more big picture. But
right.
Both of them are talking about the same markets and looking at some of the same indicators. It's just a little bit different time focus.
I know that the traders, the people that are actively trading, follow you religiously, because that's where I heard of the McClellan Oscillator years ago, was from traders. If there was somebody out there, you know, the general man on the street who just wants data, you know, maybe even his account's managed by somebody else, but he just would like to feel educated, which a lot of retirees I'm finding that as they retire, they've got some time on their hands, they're looking for education. Would one of the publications be better than another?
I can never answer that for people because it's just impossible to know what their needs are. But we have free samples available to look at so people can see the sorts of information that they contain. We have a big learning center that's all for free. There's lots of past articles that people can learn about the indicators and learn about the markets. It's basically a book or two worth of content there in our learning center.
Okay, yeah, and I've been on the learning center. It's fantastic. All right, now, you issued a major warning about the VIX futures ETF the other day. You were saying in what I read that it wasn't acting the way it was supposed to act. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I like to say that it's a double contrary indicator. What we're talking about is the ETF, or actually it's an ETN, exchange traded note, and the difference doesn't really make a difference. It's VXX is the symbol, and what it invests in is VIX futures. You can't actually own the VIX itself. It's just an indicator that measures the implied volatility that's priced into S&P 500 options. And so the VIX futures are the closest thing you can own, and this thing owns that, but it doesn't mimic the VIX perfectly in terms of its price behavior. One of the problems with VXX is that since it owns futures, the futures contracts expire. So every month they're having to roll to the next contract. By that, I mean they have to sell the existing contract that's about to expire and invest that money into one a couple of months out. Most of the time, and the condition we have right now, is there is a contango in VIX futures, which means that the farther out you go on the maturity spectrum, the higher the price is. And so right now, the May contract is at 15.85, but the June contract is at 18.27, and July is at 19.25. So if you're having to roll out of May at 15.85 and buy into June at 19.25, you're always selling something cheaper and buying something more expensive. And for that reason, VXX has this long-term bearish bias to it. It's just not an appropriate investment at all because you're losing money on the roll most of the time.
Right.
That said, right now we're seeing record numbers of shares outstanding in VXX, and that's another way of saying that a record number of people are wanting to buy shares of this VIX futures ETF, and they're pushing up the shares outstanding to a huge number. I believe that both the VXX and its doppelganger twin, the XIV, which is an inverse VIX, I think they account for a huge chunk of the VIX futures, the contracts that are outstanding. Why it's a double contrary indicator is that normally when people are piling into an ETF like QQQ or SPY, that's a sign that there's too much investor interest and it's probably a top for prices. But when they're piling into VXX, it kind of has the opposite meaning. When they tend to pile in, investors do, when the actual VIX is low, which is the sign of a top, and they pile out and they get out when the VIX is high, which tends to indicate the bottom. So a high number, I'm circling around to this, this is a long explanation. A high number of shares outstanding for VXX is actually a sign of a top. and we're seeing a record right now, and so I'm expecting that we have to have some sort of a pullback after this nice big uptrend off the February low, just in order to restore balance, restore some fear, get things back to equilibrium, and so that we can do the next up leg.
Yeah, now, and that's just kind of the second time that you've mentioned kind of a positive longer-term market. So it seems to me like you're looking for a pullback, you know, anytime now. But you're optimistic longer term. Where do you think this market could go? Because a lot of people are really out there saying, hey, this thing is going to be flat. I think it was last week that I read one of the strategists at BlackRock was saying 3.3% return for over the next each year for the next 5 years. What do you see as you look farther out on the horizon?
Once we get past the indecision about the election that we talked about in the prior segment, I see the market being able to go higher in 2017 and 18, and we're seeing gobs of liquidity. Regardless of whether that liquidity should be coming in the market or not, put aside the should question, it is there, and so that's a condition that tends to persist for a while. Eventually, it should get some traction in terms of pushing the S&P 500 to higher highs. It hasn't done that yet, but and it's probably not going to over the next month because the market's gotten overbought just to try to push off of the February low. And so we just need to digest that gain and restore some equilibrium, and then we can trend higher. I think that the best chance for gains is after a bottom that I think is due in October, which is when the worry will reach a climax ahead of the election. Once the election is passed, then people can stop worrying about the election, and they can start focusing on other things, and the market can be allowed out of the corral and can start moving where it's supposed to go.
Okay, good. So you're optimistic longer term. Now, another concern out there is corporate earnings. They have been lackluster, to say the least, and a lot of people feel like that's going to continue. Do you have any thoughts in that area?
I do, and I'm going to anger a lot of people by saying that it doesn't do you much good as an investor to look at earnings, because prices lead earnings. So if you want to know what earnings are going to do, watch what prices have already done. Generally speaking, corporate profitability moves in step with the advanced decline line, which peaked last year and only just recently moved out to a slightly higher high. And so that says that earnings can go up slightly. But if you want to know what the stock market's going to do, don't look at the thing that lags the stock market. That's just not useful. And I realize that goes against Graham and Dodd and a whole bunch of other teaching, but earnings in terms of the overall stock market don't really matter that much. They matter a great deal for an individual stock, but when you're talking about the overall stock market, there's only two fundamental factors that matter. Number one, how much money is there? And number two, how much does that money want to be invested? If you change either of those two things, you change the value, the level of the stock market overall. And so those are the two things that matter most in terms of watching what's going on and expecting what's going on.
Really interesting. Is there anything out there that you're concerned as we close out this segment? Anything that you look out there that you just, you know, concerns you, kind of sticks in your craw a little bit?
Well, if you look at gold, and if you only and you look at what people are saying about it, everybody's talking about how much higher it's going to go. Nobody's talking about whether it can go lower or not. But at the same time, we look at the commitment of traders data, the COT report, and the commercial traders, the smart money, they're net short gold in a huge way, which says that gold is not going very much higher from here.
You know, Peggy wanted me to ask you about gold, and I forgot to do that. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
I'm glad to do it.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.